Hello, y'all, and welcome to the second episode of Rangers Rundown, your 2018 podcast home for all things Rangers. On this show, we'll be covering Texas from top to bottom, giving our analysis of the guys on the field, the men upstairs, and the kids out in the farm. Stats, highlights, transactions, rampant speculation, we'll have it all. Expect some national discussion, too. We're all baseball fans as much as Rangers guys, so we'll give our thoughts on the happenings around the league, hopefully without our Astros envy showing too much. So settle in for this. Our second episode of Rangers Rundown. I'm Max. This is Hayden.
Hey, guys.
And that silence you're still hearing, that would be Mike, the third leg of our Rangers tripod, who will hopefully be joining us next week. Introductions aside, let's go ahead and play ball. Well, we are four games into the 2018 season, and I can say I am thoroughly whelmed by the Texas Rangers. How are you feeling?
I don't think I've ever heard whelmed used without a, I don't know, what is that word, an adverb?
A modifier.
Overwhelmed,
of some sort.
A modifier, yeah. I haven't, what's the baseline whelmed?
I think it's just where we're at as Rangers fans. You know, we play the best team in the league. You pick up one game, and of course, you know, Doug Fister, your team ace, going out there and taking down the multi-monster Dallas Keuchel. But picking up one game out of four and looking just thoroughly mediocre in those three losses, that's a whelming performance, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm going to be on the lookout for that and using that more in my daily conversations. But, it's interesting because there are things to look forward to. There's things that are, you know, kind of exciting, things that are positives, but then there's also things where you say, looks like we may not be a 500 team this year. How much is that due to playing against the Astros, who just dominated the American League and the Rangers last year? Remains to be seen. Fortunately, we're playing, hopefully, a team tonight, starting on Monday here, against the A's that are hopefully a little bit more even with us.
A little bit more our speed.
Yeah, you know, just kind of turn the difficulty down a little bit, and we'll see kind of where we are at, because we just kind of got brought up against the varsity guys, and we are more of a JV team, at least at this point in the season, where we don't even have a center fielder.
Yeah, and boy, is that a depressing way to start the season. You know, I liked at least some of what Texas did this offseason. You know, we talked in the first episode that there's a couple of these moves that we both agreed, you know, could work out. We had a couple of high ceiling moves. I don't know about you. I was in the camp that didn't mind that we didn't pursue any of the big names. And by the big names, I think I really just mean Lorenzo Cain for center fielder. I was fine handing the reins over, as evidenced by my over on I believe, a .353 OBP and 36 steals that I called for our poor, broken Delino. I was fine that we didn't bring in a bigger center fielder, but the fact that we didn't make a move to acquire a truly viable backup option anywhere other than in the person of Carlos Tochi should have been more troublesome at the time, and it's certainly rearing its head now. I'm gonna bring that whelm back into play here. I can say I was thoroughly underwhelmed with Drew Robinson's play in center field. Just not major league caliber defense out there. Reads were bad. First step was bad. The speed's really not there for a center fielder. He doesn't have a big arm to make up for it either. We're gonna give up a lot of runs if we're running in an outfield of Mazzara and Robinson and Rua or Chu for any significant
Calhoun
stretch of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, Robinson, and I don't know why. I mean, maybe we are more like the front office and major league GMs than we would think, because at no point during this offseason did I really even think about Delino getting injured. You know, just kind of, oh, okay, well, he's going to play 160 games, and if, you know, he needs a day off or needs to take a couple innings off, I mean, Drew Robinson, he's not going to kill us, right? I mean, he can play center field, and he might hit a few home runs, and that's kind of cool. But, yeah, Delino, 160 games, right? I mean, you just pencil it in. And, I think
why you pencil it in. This is why you pencil it in.
Yes, always use pencil when forming your major league rosters. But, you know, kind of as I've had time to think about this and it's been settling around and like, well, what do we do? Are we really going to, you know, put Tochi out there, and are we really going to put Robinson out there? it comes off almost as negligent that you didn't come up with a backup center fielder option. I mean, yeah, I think that there is a case to be made that it's going to be hard to get veteran free agents that are capable of playing center field to come to a team where they would not be the starter. I think that we're all kind of on board with Delino getting a real shot at a full season of starting center field. So you're really kind of trying to sign a backup there, but I don't know. I mean, we had $20 million to play with, and guys like Jared Dyson and Austin Jackson. I mean, signing for like $4 million, $3 million a year, something like that. I don't know. You could have just given them a slightly bigger check. They would have played backup. They would have played some left field anyways while we're waiting on Willie Calhoun. And now we're in a spot where we have two guys that we don't really even want up here in Rua and Robinson being forced to play every day.
Yeah, and so you mentioned Jared Dyson, but the other guys who are available this year were Ben Revere, Raji Davis, I believe, was a free agent for a while. Peter Borges signed with the Cubs. Austin Jackson, like you said, went to the Giants. So that year was a two-year, multi-million-dollar deal. Right. But there were a couple other guys in that sort of area. John Jay went down to the Royals. There was a couple of dudes available. Leandro Martin signed with the Tigers, and I believe he's their everyday starter. I know he started their opening day, or at least their first game, which was actually on Friday. So there are definitely some options available. Ben Revere just signed this weekend, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I want to say, I'm not saying that these guys are going to like lead us to the postseason or anything, or even really be all that valuable. But to me, it just comes off, like I said, it comes off as negligent. It's almost like, did you have a plan? Like, I mean, were you really planning on, like, what if DeShields is out for 6 weeks or he gets a setback? You know, he's out for 2 months,
so
something like that.
What just happens?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very realistic that he's out until what, the beginning of May? The beginning of June. It's realistic.
Yeah, that's within the realm of possibility for sure.
Right. And so are you really going to give, 45 starts to Drew Robinson in center field? Was that an acceptable kind of turn of events? Because if it's not, you should have prepared for it.
Yeah, and Levi Weaver, again, over at The Athletic, had a good article about Carlos Tochi and how the Rangers were looking to, of all places, the San Antonio Spurs for inspiration,
yeah,
how to put together an organization. That's kind of an interesting read, interesting to see people talking about sort of this cross-sport inspiration. But the way that read to me very much said that this team never looked at Carlos Tochi as a guy who they were expecting to be a significant part of the team as a starter at all. I mean, we should have known that. I think we did know that. Certainly the position I was operating under, when you see a Rule 5 center fielder who has his very limited exposure to the upper minors, who's not expected to be much of a hitter, but is really there to play center late in games or get some left field in, maybe pinch run a couple of times, but really just be a late innings defensive replacement. And then if we're liking what he's doing in practice, and we're liking his batting practices, and we're liking what he's doing in the clubhouse, maybe he sneaks his way into a few more starts in the last third of the season than you really expect to see, which is to some extent what we did with Delino DeShields when we brought him up. We just ended up having to put him into a bigger role, and he really thrives in it. You just don't want that to happen on day two of the season. And where I think it's really interesting and where there may be some grounds to really criticize the Rangers front office here, is that while you can't act under the assumption that your starting center fielder is going to get hurt and therefore you need to keep Carlos Gomez just lying around ready to roll. I get that.
Right.
I get that. That's not what we did. But we didn't even put anybody in AAA who can really come up and play center field. We didn't go and grab a guy like a Raji Davis or a Ben Revere, dudes who, again, we're not counting on to be center fielders, but who know how to play the position and are not Carlos Tochi, a guy who could conceivably be in high A ball right now.
You know,
a guy who, if he had a AA assignment, folks are like, I don't know, is he ready for AA? Like, that's the position we're in, and we have nowhere to go. So we're having to put Drew Robinson out in center field. And Drew Robinson is an okay left fielder. He definitely knows his way around the corner infield positions. But just, he seemed lost out there. And we're asking a guy who's never hit at the majors to not only turn into being a league average or better hitter, we're really hoping he's going to be somebody a little bit better than that, but also to kind of be learning a position on the fly. And that's really hard. A lot of guys can't make that kind of transition. hopefully for the Rangers, Drew Robinson is the kind of guy who can make that transition, but I don't know that we should really be holding out hope for it.
Yeah. Like I said, it's kind of a, him being center field, I think, was just always kind of a stopgap kind of deal, not a, you know, true backup role for him.
So that game with Robinson parked in center field that I saw the most of was definitely game four. Garrett Cole took the win. Mike Minor had the start. Wanted to talk about Mike Minor a little bit. Did you get a chance to watch all that game?
I watched about two innings of his start. He looked good. Like I said, we were talking before, and it was kind of striking to me. And I mean, maybe I'm just super jaded because I'm a Rangers fan, and I've come to expect nothing but pain and a desire for something more. But to me, it looked like he actually had a plan when he was pitching, with confidence, with when he was missing outside of the zone, he wasn't really, I don't know, relying on every single pitch to get a guy out. He was changing eye levels, throwing pitches out of the zone to set up a pitch or two pitches down the road. Really had a good idea of what he was doing. And outside from that, like the action on his pitches actually was pretty nasty.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he pitched 93 pitches, got through 4 2/3 innings. I was kind of hoping we'd scrape him through in the five because I was naive enough to think maybe we'd push across a couple runs in the bottom of the inning there and give Mike that old win, the most important of all pitcher stats. But put up those 93 pitches, 12 swinging strikes, which is a pretty decent rate. I like what you had to say about him looking like he had a plan at least. It looked like he was in sync with Chirinos, which is pretty nice to see in their first time working together, at least in a major league game. I just liked it. This is a murderously good lineup in Houston, and these guys just don't strike out, or they didn't last year. The 2016 Astros had big problems with strikeouts, and then they just all kind of had a big meeting, I guess, in the offseason and said, let's just not do that anymore. And so they didn't strike out last year at all. And so watching our staff go out there, not just Minor, but a bunch of guys go out there and really get some swing and miss, that was really nice. Staff put up 36 innings, obviously, over the four games. Got 39 strikeouts out of it total. Seven of those came from Cole Hamels, who pitched game one, obviously. Cole gave up. He was nibbling a little bit too much. He was working around the zone too much. Two home runs given up, four walks is pretty bad to see. But the seven strikeouts is encouraging. That if you were to sustain anything like that, would be the most strikeouts per nine he's had in quite some time.
Something that we touched on a little bit in the episode one is kind of looking at him and Justin Verlander, you know, just kind of the whole used to be really good, kind of scuffled. Verlander has rebounded and is a top of the rotation guy. It'd be really cool if Hamels did. And kind of to that point, I looked at, very crude analysis, but Hamels' strikeout percentage has kind of tanked as his performance has. So if his strikeout rate can kind of balloon up and bring the rest of his numbers with it, you know, that'd be a really good way to start that rebound into like the second half of his career.
Yeah, if he can start kind of recovering some of that swing and miss that he had before, that'd be something. If he's getting fewer innings out of it, but those are better innings, that might be the trade-off to make. Going to be interesting to see. We talked about Hamels maybe not even getting back to being an ace as well, but if he can sort of sit there as a somewhat above league average pitching, that's still a valuable part of this rotation.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, game two obviously was Pfister versus Keuchel. I think we did call that one in episode one as being the most likely win out of the four. I'm not sure that Dallas had his comeuppance, but we did put up a couple runs. Pfister was largely effective. Three walks, three strikeouts. You'd like to see those numbers move away from each other, and hopefully with the strikeouts going up and the walks going down. But if he wants to do it his own way, that's fine. Five innings, just the one run. Yeah, if we are getting steady performance out of Doug Pfister, that'd be pretty encouraging. That's not the takeaway I had from the Matt Moore start. It looked like he and Centeno had no connection whatsoever. There were multiple wild pitches or pass balls. Centeno was getting crossed up a couple of times. He had a jump out of crouches to grab pitches that he just clearly did not see coming. I don't know if that's because they're not good at talking to each other yet or because Moore was just that wild. The pitching line kind of indicates a not good game from Mr. Moore, but yeah. He did give up no walks. He got six strikeouts. What did you think of that one?
It's kind of what I expected, and we'll just go ahead and move on from that, I guess. I don't think that he's going to be on. I mean, we can kind of talk about this. I don't know if we'll get to it in this episode, but certainly coming up soon. We got some roster moves to make as far as our bullpen is full of guys that don't really have any options left. Same thing with the rotation kind of deal. I don't know if Matt Moore is going to survive the whole season as far as just we need fresh arms, we need effective arms, and I don't know. I can just see him getting cut at some point. So that's kind of looking too far in the future, maybe. I would hope that's far in the future and not like tomorrow, but you know, I think that he's going to end up kind of being a non-factor on this season. So,
yeah, we already are putting some work on the arms. Nearly half of the innings that we've pitched this season so far in the pen. Nick Gardewine came up and he's thrown three of those innings. He's been fine. I mean, he's looked kind of like a yo-yo up and down guy. He's going to have some good outings. He's going to have some trashy outings. I think that's sort of the expectation for a 24-year-old in his situation. Kevin Jetson has been pretty good so far. Obviously, tiny, tiny samples we're talking about here. Three appearances, 2 2/3 innings, but one strikeout, no walks, hasn't allowed a run yet. That's good. If Kevin Jetson is back to being the guy he was, that's an incredibly big pickup for this bullpen. Additionally, Jose Leclerc and Keanu Kella have yet to give up runs so far this year. Each of them has only pitched a total of an inning, although Leclerc did it over two appearances. And I've managed to catch Leclerc's appearances so far, and I've liked both of them. I mean, if this is a guy who's harnessed that stuff and is pitching with a little bit of swag, Jose Leclerc could be an impact arm at the back of a bullpen. You know, those are big ifs.
Yeah.
But the upside is there.
Oh man, yeah. I remember watching him last season. I think might have been. I don't know if he got in the league a little bit before last season, but like the first week of the season, I think it was. So it's one of his first appearances in the big leagues, and he just struck out Mike Trout on three pitches. And I said, "All right, and I think at least one of them was a swinging strike." I said, "This guy, he's kind of filthy."
Oh and yeah, so he's got great stuff.
That really caught my attention.
16, okay. He's got two different change-ups, which is a silly thing. He's got kind of a cut change that at least a couple of minor league commentators were referring to as a death ball, which is always a fun thing to have in your own bullpen and not somebody else's. He's just got good stuff. I like the fact that he kind of comes out there and he attacks people. The problem, of course, is he has, he's generally not known where those pitches were going when they left his hand, but he's still young. It's clearly the thing he's been working on, and if he can harness some of that stuff, that's a weapon piece. I mean, that's kind of what we were saying about Keone Kella to some extent. I mean, he was really good in his first turn through the majors, but this is also a guy who had big stuff and an aggressive attitude, and the question is, can he control it? And Kella largely has when he's been healthy. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I will say one more note, I guess, while we're still talking about the bullpen and the pitchers. Just pumping a little bit of sunshine as we need to do, and just for the staff overall, is so we did talk about how the Astros just decided to not strike out, and last year they were number one in baseball in terms of putting the ball in play and not striking out, and as fate would have it, the Texas Rangers as a team were the worst in all of baseball, number 30 at actually striking out batters. So the fact that we were able to take our pitch to contact team and face a don't strike out team and actually put up a K rate of over one per inning is, I mean, that kind of jumps off of the page to me.
Yeah, I mean, it really should. 6.9 strikeouts per nine across the entire staff last year pitching, which would include such superstar relievers as, you know, Brett Nicholas, for example. But that aside, you know, we are up to 9.8 after one series. And yeah, you can't take any stats after one series of baseball except for home runs hit by Joey Gallo. But we got strikeouts more than we were getting last year against a very strikeout-averse team. Something to look for. I hope that kind of continues. I mean, I doubt we're going to be a 10 strikeout per 9 team over the whole season. That'd be pretty silly. But we can dream at the very least.
Yeah, there was actually only one team last year that had 10 Ks per nine. That was, do you know who that is?
If I had to guess, 10 Ks per nine, Cleveland?
Yes, you're right.
Yes.
That is the Andrew Miller effect.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got, you know, while we are sort of still talking about the pen, we definitely have some transactional news coming up. Martin Perez should be making his debut on Thursday. We're going to have to make room on the roster for him. Who do you see moving?
Well, kind of touched on this before. Our bullpen is kind of full of guys that you can't really move except for one. I think that, I mean, Matt Bush has options. Kella, I think, has options. We're not moving those guys. So with Leclerc on his third option, I think that he's just got to be the guy that goes down. He's always got stuff that he can work on. I'm guessing it won't be bad for him to continue to have his innings kind of managed and prescripted, at least for a week or so. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. And with the 10-day DL, you know, guys are moving around a lot. But I think just by virtue of being able to go to Round Rock, he's going to go to Round Rock.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because we also have Tony Barnett coming up. Probably not this week, but the week after seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
He may be up a little earlier than that. He's apparently looked pretty good so far. So really, we are expecting him relatively soon. And then at some point in the week or two or three after Barnett comes up, Tim Lincecum should be making his Texas Rangers debut, assuming his health progresses. As best I know, the only reason he's still down is that he didn't finish his offseason workout due to, obviously, family tragedy. And then he suffered a blister on, I think, the last day of spring training, and that kind of threw him off a little bit as well. So we should be seeing those roster moves with Bartolo Colon coming up today. He's actually already made his Texas Rangers debut as we're recording this. We've already seen some of those roster moves. So we'll have to see where this progresses from here. That being said, we do have our four-game series with the Oakland A's starting yesterday, for those of you listening to this. And Bartolo Colon, we're predicting to have either the greatest game of all time.
Right.
Or the worst game of all time.
There's no in between.
Yeah, I think so. There's only options. We're gonna post a pile of review or previews of predictions, and then clearly just leave in whichever one was the most accurate.
Yeah, because then we can just say that we called it. So yeah. We're recording this on Monday night. Bartolo Colon's actually about to take the mound, and you know, I'll just be able to pull some strings and, you know, we'll be perfect on our predictions. So what do you have for Colon going tonight?
I think I'm a little higher. Okay. I'm going to say Colon scrapes his way through a couple innings. Let's say full line, I'm going to go Bartolo Colon squeaks through six innings.
Okay.
Gives up three runs, you know, nail that quality start. One walk. Four strikeouts.
Okay, I would absolutely take that.
I mean, I'd take it. We'll see if that happens.
Yeah, let's see. So I'd say that's on the best start of all time. Yeah, Colon, I can't believe that he couldn't even get out of the first inning. That was really disappointing on his return to Oakland.
Yeah, all those stingers.
They just kept coming. You know, I thought that after the fourth one in a row, you know, maybe the next guy would take a pitch, but I mean, they just kept coming.
It was awful.
Yeah, but just, you know, at least, you know, but it will be something that we remember. You know, everybody will remember the one start that Colon made for the Rangers that one year when nothing worked.
The electrifying Bartolo Colon start.
Yeah. The electrifying April in Oakland, Bartolo Colon start. The cameras were just, you know, flickering, capturing every move that he made.
And there were so many. Yeah, and Bartolo is currently facing Andrew Triggs, making his season debut for Oakland. Triggs has been a perfectly normal pitcher of the last little while here, basically hovers around league average. Tomorrow's going to be Cole Hamels, staff ace, going up against Kendall Graveman. Graveman gave up five runs, three homers, and five innings against Los Angeles in his debut. Graveman is again a perfectly average pitcher, although I feel like he does really well against Texas.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bother looking it up. I just know that it's true. He's definitely Kyle Seegering us. Wednesday is going to be Doug Fister, seeing if he can keep that mojo going. He'll go up against Sean Manaea, who I think Rangers fans should be fairly familiar with. Manaea, probably the highest ceiling pitcher the A's have had lying around the last couple years. Big lefty, just shut down Los Angeles. 7 2/3 inning, 7 strikeouts, no walks. Gave up one run on a solo homer to Mike Trout, who's apparently okay.
Yeah.
He's not Mike Karp. I know people make that confusion all the time. Trout's the good fish. Manaea is good. He's a lefty. The Rangers obviously don't really like lefties very much, although we did beat Dallas Keuchel. And then Thursday, Martin Perez comes up, makes his season debut for Texas against Daniel Mengden. He of the marvelous Raleigh Fingers mustache, and also he who gave up 6 runs in 5 2/3 innings. So, I mean, I kind of like our pitching matchups against Oakland. I say that almost every year, and then we go out there and just get housed by a bunch of dudes I've never heard of before.
Yeah.
But
it's just the Oakland A way, man.
It is. It really is.
They just
make you stay up
super late, and you just get shut down, lose a game, something around 3-1, 4-1, because Chris Davis hit 2 home runs, and that's pretty much how it goes. And you're looking at the clock saying, "I stayed up for this."
Yeah, I mean, at least if it's Chris Davis hitting home runs, you're seeing good baseball. It's when like Jed Lowry pops a couple home runs, and you're like, "Oh, why?"
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. So that's the series we've got coming up. We'll have the Blue Jays after that, and then the Angels this time next week. That should be fun. We're hoping to see some Shohei Ohtani. He may be in line to start the Wednesday game against us. Depends on how much rest Los Angeles is going to give him early on. If he's going on a typical major league rest, 4 days off, he could start this Friday against Cleveland, which would leave him in line to start against us the week after. But they may push him back a little bit, and they may manage those innings carefully. Did have a base hit in his first plate appearance this season, so he started it off. He DH'd in the first game, got a single, and then he pitched on Sunday, 6 innings, 6 strikeouts. He gave up a 3-run homer, but otherwise looked really good. I saw some triple digits. I saw just a nasty split finger. Shohei looked pretty much as advertised. And for a guy making his first start with all those jitters going on, he looked pretty cool out there. So yeah. It'll be fun to see him. I think it's already established as the first guy in a century to pick up a hit as a DH and pick up a win as a starting pitcher.
That's cool.
In the same season. So I believe he's the first guy since Ruth. So that's pretty neat. We're already off to an interesting place historically.
Yeah, I really wish that he didn't play for the Angels.
Yeah.
Just because I really want to see him, just dominate, hit 325 with a bunch of home runs and also have an ERA under 2, hitting triple digits. And he's, 23? I mean, I think that'd be really fun. But
that'd be incredible.
I can't do that. I just kind of hope that he doesn't get hurt, I guess, and doesn't embarrass himself. And that's about all I can do.
Yeah, I think I'm hoping that he's fine because it's good for the sport if he is, and that the rest of that Angels rotation is so bad that, much like Mike Trout, his production is completely wasted.
There you go.
I'm fine with those two dudes being world beaters and everything else falling off the face of the earth.
There you go. Yeah. I like it.
How much baseball did you manage to see this weekend? Did you get anything else from around the league?
I didn't get to see a whole lot, but I did through the magic of Twitter and the internet. I'm sure you'll learn about it sometime soon. Everybody is talking about it. You'll get around
man,
to it.
So.
Let's see. I saw that Bryce Harper did home run things and swag things, which is very Bryce Harper, so good for him.
Yeah, you should check the video on that. It's really good. On his, I think it's the second dinger of the game, you can clearly hear a Reds fan chanting "overrated" at him right before Harper parks one out in the lot.
Pro
tip, never yell "overrated" at a sports thing. These guys are way better at this than we think they are.
Yeah. And especially, Bryce Harper, but
Come on.
Shoot your shot, I guess. Yeah, what about you? What did you see around baseball?
A couple of things I loved. Ichiro, he is back. Back, baby. Pulling dingers back from over the fence. 44-year-old Ichiro can still go and get it. He's got two base hits, too. He's just adding on to his numbers. I am here for Ichiro back in Seattle.
Yeah, it's pretty cool for those fans that got to see him, you know, really just define something himself and have all that success and win an MVP and kind of go away. And I get the inclination that things weren't great between the two as far as Ichiro and the club, but it's really cool to have that kind of in repair. And he gets to, you would assume, go out with the team that he came in with, but he has said that he wants to play till he's at least 50. I've also heard him say that to make it clear that he says at least 50, get the quote right. He doesn't want to play until he's 50. 50 is just like the absolute minimum.
Yeah, this is break-even point. Anything under 50, he's going to dismiss as a career incomplete, just a disappointment.
Yeah, man, it's awesome. Good for him, and I'm really glad to see him, you know, be super vintage Ichiro.
It's very fun. I still kind of wish the Rangers had done that. I don't buy a lot of jerseys, but if there was an Ichiro jersey in the Rangers store, I would, in a heartbeat, I'd snap that thing up. I'd be all about that life.
Good call.
Speaking of Rangers jerseys and maybe some ill-advised purchases, Yu Darvish made his debut for the Cubs. Not the glittering performance I think a lot of us were sort of hoping for. Certainly not the one that Cubs fans were hoping for. 5 runs, 4 1/3 innings. Tossed over 100 pitches, couldn't get out of 5. And that was after, I think it was the day after that 17-inning game they had against the Marlins. So Cubs off to a weird start. They lost 1-0 to the Reds today as well. I watched all that game. Cubs just got shut down. Kind of weird. They'll be fine. I guess we're going to keep talking about the Cubs. This is the other note I have. First pitch of the 2018 Major League season. Jose Urena for the Marlins. Ian Happ leading off for the Chicago Cubs. One pitch, parked that thing in right field. 2018 picked up exactly where it left off. Home runs.
Yeah, as a fan of just overall chaos and weirdness, especially in baseball, the Marlins throwing that first pitch for a home run is just, you couldn't script it. It's very sweet. I was glad to see that.
Yeah, it was kind of where it needed to be. Like, let's not kid around here, kids. This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
the other big home runs this weekend, the Giants and Dodgers opened the season up with a series against each other. And the Dodgers lost both games, 1-0. I'm not going to say the Giants won them. This is not a podcast where we talk about the San Francisco Giants winning things. Other teams just lose them. The Dodgers lost both games, 1-0, on home runs by Joe Panic off of Clayton Kershaw and then Kenley Jansen.
Yeah.
Baseball.
Yeah, it's super weird. I also saw a note that I might get this wrong. I think it was the first time in like a really long time, many decades, or maybe ever. I should pay closer attention. But it's very unusual that a season starts with 4 straight shutouts. And here we go. Just give me the weird baseball right from the gate.
Yeah, just put it straight in my veins. We're getting weird baseball, and it's delicious.
Yeah.
Hopefully that weird baseball bug strikes the Rangers, but in the fun way and not the weird way. Let's go out there, put some runs up on these A's. Hopefully our boy Bartolo is living up to our incredibly accurate predictions. And he's giving up either all of or none of the home runs.
Yeah. He's just doing exactly what we said he would.
100%. That's the only thing he was going to ever do.
Yep. All right. Is that all we have?
I think so. Let's go Rangers. Let's knock out these games against the A's. And I will talk to you on Thursday after the conclusion of this beautiful series. We get to see our boy Martin Perez make his debut. And then we'll give our preview of the Toronto sports team that likes to get punched.
Yes. And last thing is we'll plug our Twitters here. So you can interact with us on the internet. There was talk of it earlier. I'm telling you, it's going to be huge.
Okay, I'll look it out for it.
You can find me on twitter.com, and if you go there and you search for @BUHmoney, then you will find me. That is a reference to my university. It's not weird. And you can find this podcast.
Keep telling yourself that.
It's not weird. You can find this podcast at Rangers Rundown, which is very simple. It's what you're listening to. If you forget it, turn your phone on, turn your computer on, and look at it. And where can people find you?
I am at Svelte Marvin, all one word, Svelte, and then Marvin with a V.
All right, getting crazy with the Vs.
I am indeed.
All right.
It's because it's half of a W, and as a Rangers fan, that's a thing I don't know very much about.
It's just so, such is life.
All right, I'm going to go watch Bartolo Colon.
I'll see you later, man.
All right, I'm going. Go Rangers.